Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Josh Brown, this is the wind-up. I feel sick. How do you feel?
You feel sick.
I don't know, the stomach's just feeling a bit queasy. If I was Simon Miller, I'd say there was a problem in my tum-tum.
The tum-tum problems are serious business, especially if you've not eaten today or you've not had your coffee or anything.
I thought surely it's healthier to not have coffee first thing in the morning. I'll get some fruit, I'll get some water, and then you're like, no, you get caffeine withdrawals. I feel worse.
Well, that's normally a headache thing. I don't know why you're feeling sick. Maybe
the head's
just
not that good either, but it's definitely a stomach thing. It's all just winding down.
Oh, this is such a shame because I was going to go into this podcast wishing you a happy penultimate birthday.
Oh, thank you very much. You can still wish me a happy penultimate birthday.
I'm going to do it anyway. Yeah. You know, happy penultimate birthday.
Thank you. I'm leaving this sickness behind in the year 33. Year 34, I'll be completely fine. Don't worry about it.
So please, everyone, tomorrow, or even today, if you think you're going to forget, go wish Scott Tilford a happy birthday. It's bloody, he's off work. He's having a nice time.
Yeah.
He's hopefully not going to have a bad tum-tum.
He doesn't know what he's doing. His wife's planned a whole day for him, which is very, very nice, and I can't wait to get stuck into it. But I have no idea what I'm doing, other than my mum later in the day. The other day when I saw her, I was like, and I'll see you Tuesday night. And I was like, will you? That sounds like a meal type thing, mother.
That sounds like a threat.
I know it's ending that way.
Tell me, ideally, what is your perfect, like, birthday day?
I'm a cheesy, cheesy, cheesy man because I only care about my wife, really.
Love that.
So I'll just have a day with my wife, to be honest. Like, I don't really care what we do. If we sort of like sit in a field and we eat some nice foods. I'm a big picnic fan. So I'm like, if you give me some sort of like, we go, you do like a fancy shop. In the UK, it would be Waitrose or like M&S or something.
Yeah.
And get the fancy picnic stuff in and put that in a wicker basket and then go to a field where you can't hear anything. And you've got one of those checkered picnic blankets and you just sort of sit there and eat nice food.
I feel like a class traitor sometimes when I go to Waitrose at M&S, but sometimes I like to give myself a little bit of a treat.
It's got
to
be
do
done.
Exactly what you just said.
They're not going
to
give it to you.
Well, the thing is, right, it's going to be raining tomorrow.
I know.
So that kind of scuppers that plan. But
I'm hoping that it's indoor things.
Yeah.
I don't hate the rain as much as the average person. I'm fine with the rain.
No, but I just hope you have a nice time.
Thank you.
Regardless.
Yeah. I'm playing the Final Fantasy 1, so if I need to default to that.
Is that
1987
right?
Is 2013 all over again.
Were you playing Final Fantasy 12 the other day as well?
I'm playing all of them. So I started Final Fantasy 6. That overlapped with the start of Final Fantasy 16. I finished 6 while playing 16, and I started Final Fantasy 4, and then I finished Final Fantasy 16.
Yeah.
Then I finished Final Fantasy 4, and I started Final Fantasy 1, and then Final Fantasy 1 is overlapped with starting Final Fantasy 12.
Can I tell you
so
what
right now I've got 1 and 12 on the go.
To me the weekend,
yeah.
Because I had a horrible Final Fantasy jump scare. Ooh. You know, I'd finally finished Final Fantasy 16.
Someone tried to hand you a copy of 10, you said, oh, get away from me.
You were like, play 12, and I was like, no, please, God, no.
Me at your window.
Well, I'd finally finished 16, and I thought, yes, freedom. You know, I'm going to be able to do a bunch of other stuff. Watch a bunch of movies, play a bunch of games.
Play Final Fantasy 9.
So, sat down on Friday night to watch The Pope's Exorcist, starring, what's his face? Russell Crowe.
Yes.
As The Pope's Exorcist. It was going well. Bad movie. Funny movie, though.
Okay.
A really good watch. And then I couldn't believe it, because obviously someone gets possessed during that film.
Yes.
And you know how in all the these Pope, possession probably. Movies, I really thought they were going to do that, and they don't do that in annoyingly. But in possession movies, the voice is always different, right?
Yeah.
It's always a demonic voice. And I hear this like thick sort of Yorkshire accent like come out of this young child.
Is it Ralph Ineson?
And I'm thinking, man, that sounds like Ralph Ineson.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be him. You know what I mean? Like there's no way they would have his voice coming out of this child.
And he's just in everything.
It kept on going. I thought, I'm going to have to look this up. It was Ralph bloody Ineson. It was only
Sidolphus
from Final Fantasy 16.
Yeah.
Chris Finch from The Office. And I just thought, this should have been my palate cleanser.
Mm.
And here I've got this guy's voice, who I love, by the way.
Being reminded of the game of the year, yeah.
In my ear for this entire time, reminded me of when I wasn't free and when I was trapped within that game. I just thought that was a very funny coincidence.
Yeah.
He's everywhere at the moment. I just thought, whether you're playing Diablo, whether you're playing Final Fantasy 16, or whether you're watching The Pope's Exorcist, you can't escape Ralph Einstein.
I want him to put an album out, like a Tom Waits style low tenor album. I'd be a huge fan of that. Yeah, that dude, Ralph Einstein, as much as we keep referring to him as Finchy, I'm curious if he feels like he's finally outgrown that. Because he was always Finchy to me in The Office.
I reckon to a lot of people, rightly so, he'll be the dad from The Witch. You know, I feel like that kind of broke him into a different market. Obviously, a beloved A24 film. And ever since then, he started to get those like period piece roles where he plays a bit of a wrong'un, a bit of a grump guy in like the Middle Ages. He was really good as the Green Man in the movie, The Green Knight.
Yes. Oh, Green Knight ruled. I love that thing.
I love that movie. Sorry, I've got one more bit of admin, I guess we jump into the podcast proper. Yes. A few weeks ago when we did our best games of all time list,
yes,
I got a message on Instagram from someone who said, and I'm so sorry because I don't have your handle, I just have a screenshot of the message.
Okay.
And I can't go back through
they
Instagram.
They know who they are.
I know you know who you are. I'm just so sorry. I really tried to find your name, but there's no internet in this podcast
just
room.
God
which
forsaken
is
annoying. Room.
But anyway, the point is, they said, why hasn't the greatest game ever made, Mafia 2, been mentioned on the wind-up yet? So consider it me mentioning it now because Mafia 2 is great.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the remaster sucked so much that it almost retroactively ruined the love I had for that game.
You just can't recommend Mafia holistically. Like, you want to, and there's positives of all three of them. I think I had the most fun with Mafia 3.
Ooh.
And that's not to say it's the best one. It clearly isn't. And it very much bottoms out as the more you play because it only has one thing that it does over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's like Mafia 2 is clearly the best one, but I think the immediacy of 3 is just so much better. So I don't know. I know that I'm a wrong person for thinking that, but I love the setting of Mafia 3, the music. I love playing as Lincoln Clay.
Yeah.
I love the beginning of that game so much. Like, it's to me, that hooked me more than Mafia 1 and 2 did, but I know that's a criminal opinion.
I don't think it is. I can see why you've gone for that, because the characters in that game are so good. The setting is a little bit different, maybe a little bit more interesting if you don't like the classic, you know, 40s, 50s gangster vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And the gameplay is really solid. It's just a shame that it's so bloated. Mafia 2 is my one true love. That was kind of the first Mafia game that I fell in love with. I just kind of wanted to get the Mafia 1 Definitive Edition treatment.
Yeah.
Got. I have no idea why it hasn't got that. I think that game kind of stands the test of time in a way, because it got slagged off when it came out for not having any open world activities or being a GTA clone. But the way it used its open world, I thought was really good. Like, it's not there to be fully explored or to do stunt ramps and stuff like that. It's there to add flavor. It's there to add a sense of place.
Uh-huh.
And I think the story in that game is really good. It's not top 10 of all time for me.
No,
but
same.
It's, you know, maybe top 100.
The thing is, right, you talk about the open world crime genre and how GTA made it and then killed it off because it became such a runaway thing that anyone else trying just got absolutely flattened by being anywhere, you know, in its vicinity. Same with Overwatch and hero shooters. Just couldn't get anything else off the ground because it was so, like, big. GTA 5 2013, whatever. Sleeping Dogs, phenomenal.
Yeah.
10 out of 10, perfect game.
10 out of 10.
I love that game so much. Yeah. I went through it again in the pandemic. I feel like I go through it every couple of years. I just sort of put it on and go through it again. I love that game, and it never gets its due.
How about this?
Go on.
True Crime, Streets of LA. 10 out of 10 game.
I wouldn't say so, because I hate the bit when you go underground and you fight that weird demon man and the flying skulls.
Not going to lie, never finished it.
Fantastic.
But it's still a 10 out of 10.
No, it's not. That game absolutely shats the bed and then looks at it for the rest of the game. It's bad. That whole weird demon thing, there's a stealth bit that makes no sense. There's stuff in that game where they had no idea what they were doing anymore.
I'm going to get this through game.
Yeah,
yeah, I kind of want to go back and
it'll scratch
it.
Your what were they doing itch.
I love those games. I don't know if you have any, because I know you play everything. And you finished everything back in the day. But I have a bunch of games like that. And like one that I'm going to mention, funnily enough, later on in this podcast.
Okay.
That are kind of unfinished business games where I played them as a kid, but never quite got to the end, or maybe gave up halfway through. Or maybe it was just too hard for my young gamer brain at the time. So I've got a few of those that I've always kind of wanted to revisit. And
I'm always haunted by them. I can't let something go. Like, right now, and I guess we might as well use this to transition into the what we're playing stuff, and then we'll get to some of the gaming news for the week. I didn't even say this is the wind-up. I'm Scott Tilford, that's Josh Brown.
Good morning, Scott Tilford.
To dive into whatever's happening in the gaming industry, which is to say very little at the minute, but every now and then there's stuff to talk about. But I'm playing Gravity Circuit right now, which is hands down the best 2D platformer of the year, and it is contested territory because there's also Batboy and there's also Moonrider, which are both phenomenal 2D platformers. They're all like Mega Man. They're very, very similar. Gravity Circuit is more about melee stuff. But anyway, Gravity Circuit is a phenomenal 2D Melee-based platformer that just plays like a dream. It's absolutely incredible. The music's absolutely phenomenal. Genuinely, I love everything about it. I've done it in two sittings. Until I hit the final boss. Ooh. And the second last boss is also... You did a little Christian Bale face there.
Ooh. Did I?
A little face that he does. And that second last boss, you have to fight six phases on one health bar. It's unholy. It's ungodly. It's horrible.
This got through amazing. That.
And then the final boss is a two-phase boss, but you have to beat like one little dude and then one giant dude. And I just cannot for the life of me beat the giant dude. But there's no checkpoint. So I have to beat the little dude over and over and over again. And then I get to the last guy. But I would be haunted by that if I didn't keep plugging away until I beat it. So that's my overall point, is I can't leave something like that in that moment. Because I would just know that I have to go back to the final boss months later. And I can't do that.
I couldn't do it if I was right at the very end like that. Because, you know, this is going to be like almost as good as you'll ever be at the game. If you return to that in a few months' time and you've kind of forgotten the mechanics, jumping straight into a final boss, one that sounds as hard as this does.
Also, like in this game, I mentioned this before we were recording, there's a unique purgatorial hell to games where you can't leave and know you can and get your save back at that point. I have to redo the entire last level again just to fight that stupid boss again. So I'm just stuck at the checkpoint before the boss forever until I beat it. It's horrible.
I've been experiencing this a lot of the weekend, Scott, because I've been playing a bunch of PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 1 games, and man, we take so much for granted these days about quick resume, you know, the ability to save whenever you want, checkpoints in general. Mm-hmm. The fact that if you die in a game that I've just played called Cold Fear, that I'll talk about soon, if you die before you get to the first save point, you have to start the whole game again.
Max Payne 2, is it?
Yeah, I remember how prevalent that was back in the day and how much those games just wasted your time.
Oh, man. There's so many games whether it was for memory allocation problems or whatever it was, that just, for whatever reason, wouldn't let you autosave. I remember when Splinter Cell Chaos Theory brought in quicksave and how massive a deal that was on consoles. It was always on PC, but then the fact that you could just hit a button and just quicksave and you're right there. Every game needs that. I realized playing all these old school platformers that I despise bad check. I mean, I always have, but I despise bad checkpoint placement. Why am I not just at the start of that fight? Like, why not? Like, why do I have to replay the whole level again? How is that the challenge?
I'm with you, man. I've already overcome it. An apologist for sometimes bad checkpointing, or at least purposeful checkpointing that would throw you back. And I still like that in survival horror games and when it feels intentional, but sometimes it does just feel like this game is wasting my time.
It's just like, what will you put up with?
Yeah,
and I'm just
once
it gets into that mode, what will you put up with? I'm like, well, not you. I'll see you later. It's just the Gravity Circuit is just so phenomenal that I'm like, I just need to beat you so I can be free.
So which has impressed you the most out of those three?
Definitely Gravity Circuit. They've all got different positives, to be honest. Bat Boy is very like Shovel Knight. You played a little bit of Bat Boy. Yeah. Very simplistic, very throwback kind of 16-bit thing. Very charming. It's very, very nice. Bat Boy is just very pick up and play. It's probably the easiest of the three. Moon Rider has a full name that I'm blanking on, but I found it because the composer for Gravity Circuit, when I went on his Spotify, I was like, this artwork looks cool. And I Googled the game and it was like 9 and 10s out of 10. I was like, where's this been all my life?
Wow.
Or since January. And so I downloaded that as well. But Gravity Circuit is above and beyond. That game is just liquid butter. That thing plays just so well.
Hey.
So good.
Is it going to be better than Blasphemous 2 when that drops
it already
in a
is.
Month's time?
There's nothing Blasphemous 2 could do unless it has the ability for you to fire out a photon cannon from your chest that will be anywhere close to Gravity Circuit.
That's amazing, man. I had like a similar situation with that puppet combo stuff earlier this year where, you know, I loved Stay Out of the House, obviously, and then I was like, what else have these done? And then there were just a bunch of games that were getting like 9 out of 10s, 10 out of 10s with this beloved sort of fandom around them that I was thinking... Where have you been my whole life?
Yeah,
I love it when that little kind of box opens up for you. Mm-hmm.
I didn't even say the dude's name either. It's Dominic Ninmark is the composer for Gravity Circuit. Just if you like T-Lopes, if you like TMNT or modern Sonic music, or Sonic music in general, Gravity Circuit is just, it's just a perfect game, Josh. I love it. I wish I had more checkpoints, but it's brilliant. It's definitely harkening back to a different time. Moon Rider doesn't have any checkpoints. If you die 3 times, you're back to the start of the entire level again.
Oh no. That's,
horrible.
That's not a bit of me.
No, I don't like that at all. Anything else you've been playing? Fear Effect?
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'll go back to Cold Fear. Yeah, and I've decided, by the way, because we've been so overwhelmed with games. We talked about this in the UBP with Cy on Friday as well, about how we've just gone from new release to new release to new release, and that they've been really big games. It's been hard to kind of navigate them, or it has been for me. I've decided until August 20th, which gives me roughly a month.
Okay.
I've decided it's the month of free hits. I'm not going to keep up with the new releases because there aren't really many until the end of August. And I'm just going to play whatever I fancy. And the first thing I fancied was Cold Fear.
It's very good.
PlayStation 2. Bought this ages ago and finally got around to it. Booted up the PlayStation 2. Figured out how to use the dodgy HDMI adapter that I got, which is dodgy because it keeps losing like charge. It has like 5 plugins. It's kind
of
confusing.
I got one of them for my N64 to upscale it, and it has a separate power pack. I'm like, what do you need? How are you powered?
That was what confused me because I completely forgot I needed that bit. Right. So I wasted about half an hour just thinking it was plugging and playing.
Trying to power a cable.
Yeah, wondering what the hell was going on. But anyway, the point is I finally got it working. In Cold Fear, man. I know we've talked about it so many times on the channel about it being this underrated horror.
The sleeping dogs of its day.
The sleeping dogs of its day. And I'm pleased to report that going back to it in 2023, it holds up really well. I pretty much smashed it out in one sitting.
No way.
I just played it front to back. It's a relatively short game, about 6 or 7 hours. And loved it. And I'll get into more in a second, but I know you are a fan of Cold Fear.
I love that game so much. To the point where, I love that game so much, but they never made it available anywhere else. And I never got my PS2 back, so I never was able to go back to it. I have such fond memories of playing it. I loved all the physics stuff they did with the way they... Because you're on a ship. It's a whole, infected ship, and you're this one dude. I forgot what you're called, but it's Resident Evil 4 on a ship, essentially, on a big tanker. And I love that the level moves. And I remember thinking that at the time, the animation on your guy, just moving with the ship, the different ways that you sort of pivot so you can keep the shot on the enemies and everything was really cool. And then different parts of the environment move with you and stuff. That was the thing that it was just so cool. It was such a great concept. I remember the run up to it in all the gaming magazines at the time and then getting it. And then because we were in the glow of Resident Evil 4, just being like, well, this is perfect. This could be a Resident Evil. To the point where I feel like Capcom doing Resident Evil Revelations was their version of that.
Ooh.
And I was the bit that always let me down about Revelations 1 was that they didn't have the physics-based, the levels moving all the time thing. The level moves, but it's not the same thing. And I was always like, Cold Fear's the one.
It is.
But I couldn't tell you who developed it or published it. I just remember it being incredible.
It's an Ubisoft game.
What the hell?
Which caught me by surprise. But yeah.
Not let them take an established idea and do it again?
Hey. Back in the day, this was one of my unfinished business games because it was too hard for me when I played it. The checkpoint. Pointing is,
I remember thinking it was hard.
It can be quite punishing, and the enemies hit really hard when they do hit. So I never actually got off the ship. Mm. I didn't realize that that's only half of this game. Half of it takes place in this kind of oil rig style place in the middle of the sea that is decidedly not a ship, but still keeps the sort of sea.
I don't even know
horror.
If young me got there. I remember a level that was like a big, it was like a big hangar type thing, and there was loads of enemies dotted around it, and I remember struggling to get through there over and over again and just dying, but having to get back there over and over again. But we're talking about something from 20 years ago.
This is it, right? So that sort of setting still really holds up. I'm really pleased to say, I was still kind of blown away by the atmosphere of the game, how wet it is, how kind of oppressive it is. The cool little enemies that are essentially sort of head crabs that kind of, crawl the way across the ship and then slide down the throats of these dead bodies if you don't pop their heads off. It's really creepy. It's really unnerving. The shooting kind of holds up quite well. It's not Resident Evil 4 in terms of its finesse or its reliability, I suppose, but it is still very solid. It mixes kind of static camera angles with that kind of more freeform aiming style really, really well, I thought. It has a terrible final boss, an abysmal final boss that I'm definitely going to include.
Is it better than oily Jack Baker at the end of Resident Evil 7?
It is far worse.
Right,
it's far worse than that because all the way through the game, you don't really get bosses, and if you do, you just shoot a weak spot.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, you suddenly have to learn how to dodge. You suddenly have to learn a new mini game, and it's just the most counterintuitive thing in the world. If I didn't have the internet playing this growing up, I don't think I would ever have completed it. I needed to look at a guide to figure out the tactics. I just had no idea at that point. But it is absolutely solid. I definitely recommend it now. And the biggest surprise was that obviously, like you said there, you compare it to Resident Evil 4, naturally, it has a lot of similarities. To me, I actually think the game is maybe more indebted to MGS2.
Ooh.
Not just because of the tanker section at the beginning, but there are so many similarities between MGS2's tanker and the ship in Cold Fear. But even the life bars are the same.
Right.
The menus are kind of evocative of that. And just the way it's kind of laid out, it reminds me of the opening of MGS2 if it was a survival horror game and it had that Resi 4 influence, which I'm not complaining about.
Yeah.
It was such a fun time. I pretty much did it in one go.
I tell you, if Kojima ever went back, like obviously he's done bits of horror in Death Stranding, and like there was that project with Guillermo that got canned or whatever, but like, if he did a third person survival horror, that would be sick.
I would.
It'd be a good
definitely
time.
Play that.
Tell me you? About Fear Effect.
Yeah, I was about to jump into that.
Do it now.
Fear Effect is not good. It's not a good game. And
I tried warning you.
You know, here's the thing. For anyone who, no one will know the backstory to this because we haven't talked about it yet. But one day, me and Scott went to the CEX that's close to where we work.
Yeah, and it's a video game shop for the global listeners.
That's right, secondhand video game shop.
Yeah.
And you wanted to get a game. You went and got Octopath Traveler 2.
I did.
And while you were looking for that, I was just looking at the PlayStation 1 games and noticed a game called Fear Effect that had four discs and was Tank Controls, and it was a tenner.
You went, what's that? And I was like, you don't know what Fear Effect is. And and you bought immediately. I've never seen you buy anything immediately.
This is an insight into my brain. Yeah. This is how it works. This is how I get on games like Immortality and Thymesia. So it just like sort of takes my fancy, and then I've got to know what it is. So Fear Effect, I had no idea what this thing was.
You need to play that train one. Sorry, on PS1, there was a one that was on the train. I'm almost definitely going to describe it because it was something, it was like on the train.
Go on.
And it's like, it's a tank-based survival horror, like Tom Clancy style thing that was on PS1, and it's called like Stop the Train or something.
Oh, I want to play that right
I'll
now
I'll find
as well.
It for you.
But Fear Effect is kind of a write-off. It's this, at the time, I guess, four-disc, lushly cut-scened, tank-controlled action game? Chase the Express. Yes. I will get that. That is cel-shaded in nature, so a lot of the graphics like kind of hold up today. Like a lot of the static camera angles that you get that frame the scenes look really good. It's just too punishing, I find, for a tank-controlled video game, because that kind of control works in a survival horror game when you've got slow enemies. It doesn't work for me when you've got enemies shooting at you and you've got this terribly clunky dodge roll that you can use to dodge through bullets. It's unreliable. You don't know where you're aiming. It's dreadful. And I'm stuck at the very first boss in the game.
It's not worth your time.
It's not worth my time, man. The first boss.
How much
did
you pay for it again?
A tenner. £10. £10.
You could have had Final Fantasy for that.
I could have had anything. I could have had like 10 Gregs for that.
You could.
You know? But the first boss is so bad because it's too punishing. Because you can't heal in the game. Or at least you can't at this moment in time with conventional med kits. I looked online and apparently the healing only works when you get to certain checkpoints or defeat certain enemies. So I'm going into this first boss with 1 HP. You know what I mean? If I get hit once, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And I tried about 10 times last night, thought, no.
No.
And now I think my Fear Effect journey may have come to an end.
The whole part of this was baffling. You've been fascinated by it and wanting to buy it, buying it impulsively. It's been poetic the entire way through.
It looked like Signalis. That's what got me in, you know? Yeah. That kind of cel-shaded sort of survival horror type video game. And I thought, in my quest to love that genre to its fullest extent, I kind of want to play everything that I've missed. I want to go back and play the old Evil Dead games. I want to go back and play the old Resident Evil ripoffs that I never touched or never finished.
You mean Tank Control Horror?
Yes.
How are you going to play the original Alone in the Dark?
Yes.
How far back are you going to go?
Literally, that's what I want to play.
Okay.
When Alone in the Dark comes out, like the reboot of it comes out in October, I want to go back through some of those.
That original one is a bonfire.
I want to play the original, and I want to play the one that came out on Xbox 360.
I have
a sneaky suspicion that I might end up loving that one. I was obsessed with it back in the day, but I never got it because everyone told me it was bad.
It is.
I played the demo over and over again, and I don't know why I didn't listen to my gut back then. I wasn't confident enough in my own tastes, but now I reckon I'm going to have a good time with it.
I remember two things. I remember renting Alone in the Dark, that 2009 one or whatever it was, and the guy being astonished that I wanted to rent it. I remember that guy's face when I wanted to rent it. And two, you'd be able to pull off the Edward Combi coat.
You'd
like the hair. You'd look awesome.
If
all of this results in you wearing a nice long coat, I think that'd be very nice indeed.
I used to always want a long coat back in the day.
Matrix style.
Could never pull it off.
Nah, me neither. It's a big log of leather coats.
I'm going to the gym now. You know, maybe I'll be able to pull it off soon.
Get in coat shape.
Yes.
We should talk about, because I already mentioned Gravity Circuit. That's what I've been playing alongside literally just Final Fantasies. The next thing on my radar is Sea of Stars, which is another RPG. And then I still need to play Octopath Traveler between now and then, but I've got two more Final Final Fantasy used to do. So we'll talk about some gaming news stuff. Sony's Project Q has leaked over on the YouTube channel ZubiTech. I just wrote down the specs of this thing. I think this thing looks insulting, like if you told me that a criminal had hacked this together to try and fool the populace, it would be exactly the same design. I think it looks abysmal.
I don't get this at all. It looks really horrible. Don't.
Anyway, the super quick though to run down the specs of this thing, if you don't know, it's an 8-inch 1080p LCD display. It goes up to 60 FPS, and it only streams from PlayStation 5 right now. And I guess this person will slowly figure this stuff out. The person who's got their hands on it on the ZubiTech channel, is there any other use for this thing? It doesn't seem like it has any storage capabilities. It's just a streaming tablet. It's nothing to it. And they want to charge. And the rumored price for it is between $200 and $300. Unbelievable, Josh.
They've always been upfront about this. I don't think this is like a swindle left field thing. You know, they came out and they said that it's going to be the streaming device. It's got like, you know, it's essentially a DualSense controller.
It is literally that.
With a big screen in the middle. And for me, yeah, that's not the most visually appealing thing, but I think it works. You know, the DualSense is a comfortable controller.
True.
And it's a robust and satisfying controller, because obviously you have the haptics, you have the triggers, and all of that jazz. To me, I've never been able to fully vibe with the kind of controllers that you get on these.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon. Handhelds, you know, whether it was the PSP or even the Nintendo Switch, which I like a lot, it's not ideal.
The Vita is very nice.
For me. Mm. The Vita is probably one of the better ones, but even that, I don't love it. Whereas if you just take the controller I do love and whack a screen in the middle, no. I don't see the problem with that. Controller, good. Screen, good.
the meat shepherd's pie of the gaming world. Yeah. It's the custard shepherd's pie. I can't believe how much money they have, how much like PlayStation matters and how this is the design they've gone with, where it is just take any tablet and just slice a controller off and bolt it on the side. Now that we're seeing it in motion, it is literally that. The only thing that like gets around that that's what they've done is that the back panel, it's a new back panel that like holds it all together. But it's like, oh my God, it looks cheap AF. It looks like something you get from a market.
Ah, man, like I said, I don't think it looks absolutely gorgeous, but I don't know what else I would have personally wanted.
Well, that's not for you to say necessarily, or me. They need to wow us. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, if this is there, that's the best design you can come up with for a tablet-based handheld. It's terrible.
I'd always take, like, usability over visuals in terms of, like, handhelds. Like, and like I said, I don't know how you innovate on the DualSense controller itself. Mm. To make something more comfortable than that?
No, it's not that. It's like you still maintain the form factor for the most part. Like, obviously, there's the feel of that thing in your hands, which if we're talking about, like, the part of the controller you hold, it's the sides of the DualSense.
Yeah.
You can have that for the sides of the tablet. It's just about designing a more slick form factor that brings it all together, that doesn't just look like you Tears of the Kingdomed it. Like, it looks like they sliced a thing and bolted it and went, yeah, that's that.
It does look
like that. It looks terrible.
Oh,
for the money as well. Like, oh my God, the price.
The price is kind of crazy, but...
And it can only stream.
That's it.
And you can do that right now?
You can't. Well, you can, but not on like a lovely tablet with
You
like,
totally can.
No, but I mean in this way, like in a way that is
But you just,
nice
you
to
just,
use.
You'd hold a DualSense. It would pair with the tablet. It pairs with the PS5. You want to do remote play.
Yeah.
That's the same thing.
Yeah, but where am I putting the tablet is the question.
Just on the desk.
Well, I might as well play on the telly.
That's what I would say.
This is something I'd be taking to a hotel. You know, it's something I'd be maybe taking on a train. Mm. Something I would be taking to work.
But you wouldn't be taking on the train because it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's the thing, right? That's the issue, right?
It's nuts.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Can you stream games in that way, or do you have to be next to a...
Well, I guess that's the thing. We don't know the specifics yet. They've just said that it's remote play only. So I guess if you had a strong enough Wi-Fi, then you could beam... You'd still have lag and everything, but you could beam something in.
It's just
the fact that they don't want to fully fight the Switch. They don't want to do a new Vita. They've just done this weird, like, just looks at the end of a Friday chuck together thing.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I don't want the thing because it's streaming only. Like, if I'm going to stream video games... At a push, it'll be the PS3 games that are currently on PlayStation Now, and I'll be doing that via my console. If it had any kind of storage, if it had any way to play games natively or maybe download games, I think I would definitely jump in because the idea of playing those games on the go on a big screen with a DualSense to me is very appealing. Mm-hmm. That would personally make my Switch obsolete because the screen would be better.
The controls would be better.
Nah, screw that, man. But unfortunately, it's not. I'm interested to see its functionality. Can you take it on the train? Can you take it to hotels and like stream things from the cloud? I assume you have to. I'm assuming they've got to have that in there.
I think
or not it works or not is going to be the big question, I think, for that money.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think that's the thing. I don't know what you're charging for. Like, what are you charging for? It's a 1080p screen. It's not like it's this 4K thing or anything. I mean, there's the whole thing with Retina displays, the whole, like, the distance between your eye and the tablet, how that makes up the distance. There's only so much that you can see or whatever. I just can't believe this is... I mean, we knew this is what they were going for because that's what the original stuff was that leaked. But now seeing it in the wild, it runs an Android. It seems like it runs Android OS as well. Some sort of, like, weird bridge between the PS5 OS, like their custom stuff. And everything else, but I just look so cheap. It just looks so bad. Like I said, if you told me you got it from a market, I would believe you.
Yeah.
Someone who just hacked a controller in half. But we'll see. That thing I think is launching later this year. But it that thing's a write off to me. Like if I want to stream a PlayStation game like that badly, then I'm not going to pay the money. This money, I will just put it on a phone and play with a controller.
Yeah.
If I wanted to do that, like there are plenty. Phone holding devices that you can just put on a controller, just hold the phone right above your controller and just play like that.
You know, my issue with this has always been screen size. Like,
but it's close though.
Nah.
Just hold it there if you need to.
Nah, it doesn't work. It didn't work for the PlayStation Portable. It didn't work for the PS Vita for me. The Switch only worked because it was way bigger than those. And even now, I have trouble going to the Switch because it's so small from what I want, and the screen itself isn't great unless you've got an OLED, in my opinion. So I feel like I'm losing that quality. I want the biggest screen possible in a way that isn't kind of ridiculous. And to me, I look at this and I think, like I said, screen big, good, DualSense, good, you know?
Yeah.
I can't help but get away from that.
I hate them doing the lowest effort thing possible. I guess we'll do this. Mm. We're not gonna commit to a level of R&D that would make a whole new thing that makes you go, oh, that thing looks really cool and sleek and must have. It looks like exactly what they described in the most bare bones way possible.
Yeah.
And part of me just hates that. I'm just like, put the effort in, boys, if you can actually do this.
Ah, fair.
But it depends. And also, I'm the biggest Sony Vita fan there is, and that's your benchmark. So it's like going from that slick the Vita is to this ramshackle thing. Anyway, speaking of ramshackle things, and the PlayStation 5 Pro is being talked about again over on key2gaming.com, saying that according to their sources, it is in development. It's called Project Trinity. And they mention, just as like a neat little thing here, that Sony have used Matrix names for quite some time. Something we didn't realize at all, even though it's been staring us in the face as Matrix fans. The PlayStation 4 Pro's code name was Neo and the PlayStation VR's was Morpheus. And now the PlayStation 5 Pro is Trinity. The whole thing's called Project Trinity. This article retweeted by Tom Henderson over on Insider Gaming, who has in himself written up stuff about the PlayStation 5 Pro anyway. It's more just a talking point. Do you want one? Do you want a PlayStation 5 Pro?
No, I don't. I don't Me need either. One yet. I will happily embrace one maybe in a few years' time. But to me, none of the big game companies have delivered a game that I think even gets close to etching the power out of the regular PS5. Like, where are these Unreal 5 games that are supposedly going to do that? So far, we've had great-looking games. We've had great PlayStation 5 exclusives. Mm-hmm. But nothing, to me, that makes it feel like the original console was tapped out in a way that I genuinely did feel about the PlayStation 4 back in the day, because that came out, and even at launch, you know, that and the Xbox One were underpowered, and it felt like they had a limit on them earlier than the PlayStation 5, which has only, as of this year, become widely available anyway. Mm-hmm. I think it's too soon, but then, who knows, they might sit in it for a little bit and then release it.
So weird, man. Like, I get, like, the sort of hardware realities of you put a system out, you're constantly refining, you find ways to make components smaller, and whatever else, you iterate, you get a smaller PS5, and I guess one of the only negatives of the PlayStation 5, from a casual point of view, is the size of it. It is, like, the overbearing, ridiculous nature of it. Maybe you get a more small one and that just makes that work. But yeah, I agree. Like, we're yet to see anything really. I mean, my mind goes to things like it's the instant loading stuff. It's things where I'm surprised by like the raw guts of the hardware doing something as opposed to just a hyper detailed game, because we've had them for years kind of thing. You can make something look more lifelike. But I personally am more impressed by a whole realm in Final Fantasy loading instantly. Mm. Or like Ratchet and Clank, you hit that one, the crystal, that level with the crystals, you hit that, the whole thing renders immediately. Stuff like that. I need a game that's built around that. I need something that fundamentally wouldn't work on the previous system. And so until they have that, and then we all get sick of them, I don't need the Pro. It's one of those things where I just think that they'll do it because they tapped into the Pro sort of branding with the PS4. And I think they barely talked about that thing's sales numbers.
Yeah.
But assumedly it's enough where, depending on the hardware cost, you almost might as well just put the Pro thing out. There's enough elite gamers who will buy everything.
Genuinely.
Like me.
I'm all for more options in gaming as well. And if you release a PlayStation 5 Pro at the same price point, or maybe slightly higher than what the PS5 is going for now, and then you reduce the price of the regular PlayStation 5, which seems like it is happening kind of imminently as they kind of change some of the components or make that production more efficient, then I'm like, sure, you know, you bring this price down, you bring that barrier of entry down, and you give people a quote-unquote premium device that they can opt into or not. To me, this time around, I'm not just going to jump in the same way that I did the PlayStation 4 Pro. The proof will be in the pudding, but I do think that if The Last of Us Part 3 comes out in 2027, I'll be getting a PlayStation 5 Pro for that. Sadly, I know myself too well.
Me too. I know you as well. I will not be doing that, but I wonder, I'll get one day one. I wonder what they can possibly do. Like, because if I think about, you know, glass ceilings that we're hitting in the industry, it's quality modes versus performance modes. It's that idea that you can't just make, well, assumedly, you can't just make whatever the vision is for this game. But I feel like the issues with the industry are way bigger than that. Like, it's crunch, it's lack of focus over time, it's whatever it is. It's all these wider issues that aren't giving you the generation's best games. Like, I think that's something that a piece of hardware is not going to solve. If anything, it'll just mean that those goals they're trying to hit are even more exorbitant and ridiculous.
Yeah,
and you'll get even more broken games.
That's the headline, isn't it? The PS5 Pro will make for more broken games. I love that.
I would be amazed if it solves any of the issues. I mean, like, yeah, I guess it would help with you would assume that it would help with something like Jedi Survivor, where we're talking about raw optimization.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something on the hardware side that can help with optimization or whatever, but I just don't even think we need this at all. Like, no. I feel like the generation was pushed back by almost 3 years because of the pandemic. So I would delay this by 3 years. Like, I would almost, we pretty much hit pause on life for 3 years. And then yeah. It's like, if we're resuming it now, then you just sort of pretend the PS5 just launched. Hey, by the way, we've got God of War and Horizon. There's launch games. Isn't that good? And then go from there.
Yeah.
Because nothing happened for the first few years.
No, I agree with that. And that's kind of why I think it's too soon for it, because it does feel like the generation is still starting to only kick in now, because
PS4 Pro was 2016, I think, or 2017?
Good question.
It's about 3 or 4 years after the... Years. So yeah, so we're about to hit that. So I guess they're just trying to hit that cadence again, but it's just like, no one wants this or is ready. It'll still sell to a degree, but it just feels like, unless you can, you know, put the proof in the pudding with the games, then yeah. What's the point?
This is it. Like, you could say nobody wants it, but I would say maybe the same was true for the PlayStation 4 Pro, and I do think it's a case
of... I did back then, yeah.
Yeah, if they come in and they price it too ridiculously and it's way more than a PS5 now, I don't think it'll sell. But I do genuinely think if they knock the PS5 down and make this like the price point that currently has, then I don't think anyone would kind of bat an eyelid, because it's kind of a win-win. If they want to ignore the Pro, fine, get the PlayStation 5 original for a lower price, you know? It does make business sense from that standpoint, I think, just in terms of, does the market want this? Or I think that's kind of different to, will the market accept this?
That's true. And I think that's sort of the console side of it as well, where like the pro systems or like incremental systems is more of a PC thing. Like, get the latest graphics card. There's one every few years or whatever it is. And for me, the only sell on a console side is like, this is the system that just makes you not have to think about that stuff. Like, you just get to max everything out, all the sliders, all the toggles, get the best version of that game, and you just play. That was the only reason I ever got a PlayStation 4 Pro, because the original PS4, like you said, was struggling and was hitting things at 30. Where I could be playing them at 60, and little things like that. But I was like, I just don't want to think about any of this, and I'll pay for the problem to go away if I need to. And I hate that. That's the reality of gaming.
It is.
But I just, in a console space, that's sort of like middle ground of like, it's not PC sliders, it's not the underpowered stuff, it's the middle ground. I will pay for a problem to go away so I can just play the game. I hate having to think about all this stuff. I honestly despise it.
It's horrible for you, because like, that's the future, isn't it? Like, as we get...
I'll just get a PC and shoot myself.
Yeah. You've already got a Steam Deck, so there you go.
Halfway there.
As we get into like these new generations, those sliders are becoming more common in the console space, and I like that. It gives me more options over my games. But you know, if you
four wrong consoles, options and one right option,
no,
horrible.
No, it's not true.
It is.
It's not true.
It is.
But you know, obviously, there's a bunch of people who do come to consoles for that ease. Mm. But I don't feel like we've had the console dream for about 13 years, you know? I think the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One really killed off the dream of the console being this plug-in-and-play thing. I think once they introduced game installs and game updates, that dream was dead, and we've only gotten more into the PC realm since then. But I cannot remember the conversations we were having a decade ago when we were talking about, oh, isn't it horrible that if a kid gets a PlayStation 4 at Christmas, they'll spend that Christmas morning installing games and updating games rather than just playing like we used to. We always have this kind of rose-tinted view, and to me that's indicative, in my view, of consoles moving towards the PC space for the past however many years.
It is. I mean, that installation times, I think, are meaningfully different from once the game is ready to go and you hit start, then having to faff with stuff. Like, just, I think that's the crux for me, because it's like, we can put up with installation times. We've had them for a long time, even on the 360 or whatever it is. File sizes take longer, whatever. But there's just something about that extra roadblock of like, and then starting the game and it moving, and you're doing the first level going, oh, well, I guess that probably could look better. I should probably go retweak the brightness again. And you restart it again. I could punch the wall. I hate it.
Here's the thing, right? I genuinely think that's always been a part of console gaming to a degree, especially in terms of the base stuff like brightness and whatnot. Is it a case of, in a way, I know we've definitely gotten more sliders, but maybe like us as gamers have become more aware of that stuff. Like, funnily enough, going through Cold Fear, like that game doesn't have even a brightness slider. You know what I mean? It has no display options whatsoever. Actually, no, Cold Fear does. Fear Effect didn't, sorry.
Right. But the age-old assumption was that you did all of that on your TV. Like, all back in the day, most games or whatever back in the day would just put something on screen and tell you to calibrate your TV to that thing. And so, like, obviously that's kind of changed. HDR stuff changed it massively as well.
Yeah.
But, like, I just want we talk about AI doing everything for us. Can you just sort my TV out? Like, I just want to play the games. I just want to play the games.
We've talked a lot about Sony here, but yeah. I kind of want to throw the ball in your court as to what this means for Microsoft, because a few weeks ago, we got the story from, I can't remember who exactly it was, from Digital Foundry, but it was a Digital Foundry podcast where they said they were informed that the Xbox Series X was already their mid-gen refresh. So
you can tell.
You can tell. Yeah,
they don't make anything for it.
Yeah.
Mixed up with the Series S.
My question is, do they stick with that line of thinking, or does the release of the PlayStation 5 Pro prompt them to rethink those plans and say, no, we have an actual mid-gen refresh on the way?
I don't think they can risk doing a third unit. I think that they wait for the PlayStation 5 Pro specs and then they just point at the Series X and just go, we've already got one of them.
Yeah.
Because it'll depend what if there's anything that the Series X can do and that the PlayStation 5 currently can't, that's the weird legal side of it tends to mandate feature parity or whatever, performance parity anyway, and even on the Xbox side, between Series S and X. So they'd have to break all that stuff for like the next gen, for the next system to be so much, you know, demonstrably better. It would go against their whole sort of like push that we want everything available everywhere, but we're also going to sell you the best system ever. And then, but it's what you're just paying for frame rates. Like you're paying for maybe a higher resolution or something because the Series S is going to super sample everything anyway. That thing on the Digital Foundry when they were like kind of said that and it was like, oh, that makes everything make sense. Because if you just think of the Series S as the main console and the X as the deluxe optional one, not the one they led with when they revealed the damn thing. But that makes everything make sense. And it's like, why is there nothing on Series X? Because it's optional.
Because I'm embracing slightly this PC culture, I'm at a point where I probably would pay for frame rates and resolution. I did last generation, and I will this generation. It's too soon right now, but if both consoles did bring out these refreshes,
that's the death of console gaming.
I'd wait for a game, and then I would buy into it for that particular game that I was really looking forward to, that I wanted to play with the highest frame rate and the highest resolution.
And that's what they want.
Sliders, like you mentioned.
Yeah, that's what they want. That's the PC space. Like, get a different graphics card every few years. Like, if they could tighten that up and sell you a PlayStation 5 like update chip every year and it's £400, like, they'd love that. Especially Jim Ryan would. I feel like that is the road. But I think it affects actual product turnaround, project turnaround too much for that to be crunched even faster. I feel like we're struggling to get, I mean, how many like on fire games has there been this year? There's been some great stuff, but things like Redfall are still absolutely abysmal. Jedi Survivor couldn't run for 2 months. Like, it's stuff like that where I'm like, it needs to be pristine before you start saying like, oh, actually there's an extra tier. You can't even hit your base tier.
It does. And I kind of wonder whose fault that is. Like, not to throw fault at the developers or anything like that. It's probably the people who were, like you said, crunching these release windows and, you know, not giving the team more time. But I do think it's funny that we've had a lot of cross-gen releases that have had, you know, spotty releases depending on which system you're playing it on. Mm. But we've also had a lot of current-gen exclusives that haven't hit the mark, like you said, Jedi Survivor and Gotham Knights last year and Redfall this year. And it's like, where's the issue here? Because it actually can't mean it's developing for a bunch of different SKUs, because there's only a couple and there's only three then, as opposed to like the five or six that you'd be developing if you were making a cross-gen game. Like, where's the issue? Where's the bottleneck? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, well, that also means that you can't fundamentally have a feature that would be integral to gameplay or level design or anything like that, because it has to work on this little family of systems, which can fundamentally only be differentiated by resolution or frame rate. You couldn't have a level type that was only available in the Series X or whatever the new system is, or the PlayStation 5 Pro or whatever. So it's we're already there. You're already paying for resolution jumps.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the most boring feature for a console industry possible.
Oh.
I hate it.
To me, oh man, see, it is. It's boring. It's just like rote numbers at the end of the day. But I don't mind it because of what you just mentioned there. If they did release something that was so powerful, it would make the previous ones obsolete. That's when I would get my back up a bit, because I'd be thinking, it's only been three years. It's only been 4 years. People have bought in on the promise of these base systems, and you haven't delivered on that yet. To me, the kind of compromise is, well, we'll give you something a bit more powerful, but not powerful enough to make it everything you've just invested in useless and feel redundant, you know?
So that's definitely the Microsoft promise. Yeah. And it's like you said, it's a hard line to walk, but it almost invalidates itself. Like, we want you to pay £300+ for this new system, but it fundamentally can't give you anything the old systems can't. But we also need to sell you a premium price.
Yeah.
Like,
it's hard. It's
so dumb.
It is dumb. And I'm a sucker because I feel like this has been so normalized in the tech industry that I don't bat an eyelid at it. You know what I mean?
Well, that was the conversation when the PlayStation 4 was coming out. It was like, oh, we can't let this be the norm because they'll just do it every 3 or 4 years and then we're here.
Yeah.
And it's the... Sony never really talked about their PlayStation 4 Pro sales compared to PlayStation 4 because it was always easier to say PlayStation 4 was the highest selling system after PS2. So like it was always that thing. It was like if there's enough of an audience there, they'll just keep doing it. And there's enough of an assumption from the base peasant owners like us to go like, I wonder if I'd get the new one if it would play better.
Yeah.
I wonder if it would actually solve that frame rate issue. I wonder if it would solve that resolution issue or whatever. And there's enough momentum there to just keep taking it over. And then you'll get a PS6 and a PS6 Pro and whatever else. And it's, it's that thing. It is the industry, like, re-embracing the tech side. Like, E3 started as a tech convention or whatever you want to say. Like, there's enough tech in there.
Absolutely.
Just go back to that. But I don't want that.
Personally, I'm okay with that. Because it's always... I
don't know if the games are there. But the game's on there.
Even without that, I don't mind because it won't affect me. You know what I mean?
It will for $300 out of your pocket.
No, but I won't buy it if it's not worth it. That's what I mean. If it's always going to be an option, and they are definitely positioning it as an option, then the ball is always going to be my court. And I don't need to buy into it if I don't want to and they don't give me reason to.
But then
I think that's a better place to be than, like I said, completely splitting the fan base and saying, if you want to play The Last of Us 6, unfortunately, it's PS5 Pro only. You know?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because then on the project side, on the scope side, you aim as high as possible. That's always the thing in game design. You aim as high as possible, and then you make it fit the consoles or whatever, and you trim the features. You trim the things out to make it work, whether that be frame rate or even entire levels or whatever. You would never get that awesome game that makes the most of the actual hardware on the market because it would always still have to work for the lowest system on the market.
I'd disagree in terms of what we're talking about in terms of specs, in terms of frame rate, in terms of resolution, because that's kind of what they do anyway. Like
that's what I mean. That's my problem.
Ah, right.
Like they're not making something that is fundamentally built on the SSD that instantly loads, that gives you level design, whatever, because it has to work on the Series S or whatever the other thing is.
It's Series S, but I think PlayStation doesn't have that issue, you know, with the PlayStation 5 Pro specifically. Like both of them are going to have an SSD. Both of them are going to have the same kind of core technology. So I think PlayStation definitely fares better with this stuff than Xbox, which, you know, the S is kind of more underpowered in a way that I think does shackle games.
Yeah, I mean, various game devs have talked about that.
Totally in their scope, but I think with the PlayStation 5 Pro, it could be so incremental that it is just kind of like how people develop now, which is usually they develop for PC, they aim as high as they can, and then they bring it down for consoles. It's just that, hopefully, like with the PS4 Pro, the amount they have to bring it down to hit the Pro makes it more glamorous and makes it the premium version of that game. And that's something that I'm personally fine with, because then if you don't care about frame rate, if you don't care about resolution, you can just ignore it. If you do care about that stuff, it's a nice little bonus. It's a nice little extra.
Yeah, I guess it's just like the simplified version of this is the most appealing, which is you have hardware specs, you are using them to make something. The something you're making is then affected by the other systems on the market. And even within that same console family, so you then have to sacrifice the vision. Whatever that vision is, I have no idea, but I want to see it.
Yeah.
So far, we talk about like the current generation hasn't had anything that's like blown you away in terms of like next-gen features or whatever. That would be that vision thing. And if they can't hit that now, then they almost never will, because they'll always be held back by supporting the previous systems.
I'd push back against that from my point of view, just because I don't think that's going to happen on the PlayStation side of things, because I don't think the jump is going to be that radical where the vision has to change to accommodate the PS5. Like, that never happened with the PlayStation 4 Pro and the original PlayStation 4. Like, they managed to get them running in various states, but I never felt like the PlayStation 4 was like holding back the potential of that generation in my eyes. Like I said, I would
not the Pro,
I would view that on the Xbox side with the S, but I think on PlayStation side, with its two different systems that it might end up having, I personally don't think we'll ever get to that position where the visions for those games are getting dragged down because you need to develop for a Pro and a base version. Because I don't think the gulf in quality or technology is going to be that big where they kind of feel shackled by the base.
Yeah, and it does like fundamentally make it a luxury optional purchase, like you said. It's just that I think that is then a bit of a shame, because then why are we not aiming that high? Why are you not maximizing the artistic output of the creatives? Like, you know, what Well, I just want, that's the thing. It's, we never know what they're going to make until they put it in front of us. But I'm curious. What can you guys do with this hardware? And if I view that as a limitation, having to cross develop, like it just kind of is. Like there is a big list of the differences in various games on Pro versus regular PlayStation 4. And even if it was as small as, I remember Abzu, the game from the art director of Journey, has more fish on screen when you're on PlayStation 4 Pro. And I was like, well, that would affect how it feels to swim through that game.
Of course.
Something like that.
Oh, absolutely. But to me, that doesn't affect the vision of the original game.
No,
right,
but it's just that idea of trying to, the console promise, they're trying to get the optimum version of something, like, or trying to get the instant gratification version of something that has all the bells and whistles and is satisfying across the board without feeling like you're missing out on something because you didn't get the extra little tweak to the extra system.
What's funny, I think, and not to go around in circles, but I think that's always been part of the console space because while it might have never been the case within console families, I think the two big consoles in terms of going head-to-head on specs, you know, the Xbox and the PlayStation, have always traded in that.
Yeah.
And I've always had a certain element when I've only had one machine over the other of, is this the best version of the game?
Oh, I Google that every time anything comes up.
That's it, right? So, or has the Xbox already, or has the Xbox or the PlayStation, which one's got the edge? Which version has got the edge? So to me, that kind of level of comparing and the wonder of whether you're getting the best version of a specific game has always been part of console gaming to me. So that would maybe be more pronounced with these families, but it would never be it wouldn't invalidate the dream because I think that dream has always been invalidated by virtue of having two machines going to war.
Yeah, we might end up doing like a whole pot. We'll probably will do more stuff on it as more details come out about it. But that having to choose between them and find the optimum one, that's the thing that I just want to be done with. That's the problem that I'm paying to go away. That's the problem that they're offering to be paid away by giving you a pro system. So don't worry about figuring out what's best. It's this system. And so then it's like a buyer's remorse type thing because it's like they need to do right by the people who are investing in those systems, which comes back to the games that we have on the generation so far. And it's like, if you're going to do a pro thing, then I'll probably pay the money because I hate thinking about this stuff. And I just want the best version of that game. But then it comes back to the games and the actual games that we're playing and what they're designed for. So I think it all kind of connects. But it is paying to make a problem go away. The amount of times, the fact that Digital Foundry has exploded is indicative of how like much we have to make all these decisions and research resolutions and zoom in and look at these different things and figure out the best use of your time.
I think, like I've said that so much, I think, you know.
He does think.
What a redundant phrase to say on a podcast. Of course,
In my opinion.
With what you just mentioned there, I don't think throwing money at the problem will ever make that problem go away,
right,
just because of how the console industry is built.
I was going to say, not if the industry is like this now.
Even before then, like I said, with the rivalry that's going on, even if you got a PlayStation 5 Pro and it had specs on paper better than the Xbox Series X, even then, there's no guarantee that the games will run better on it versus the Xbox Series X if they're more optimized for the Xbox. And I think that's always going to be inherent to gaming. And I'm not saying that's a good thing.
No.
I'm just saying that, to me, is why I never view it as I'm going to throw money at this problem for that problem to go away. Because even if you've got the world's most powerful console, it doesn't guarantee crap. It doesn't guarantee that you're getting the world's most powerful games because if they're better optimized somewhere else, they're better optimized somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what I meant about the issues are bigger. They're more project-based. They're more design-based or whatever it is. But there's an assumption that if you give a set of game developers in particular a set of specs, they can aim for them, as opposed to giving them multiple sets of specs and how that affects the thing that they're trying to build. Thinking back to the PlayStation 2 era, the 360 era, like there were specific sets of specs. There was like specific stuff to aim for. It wasn't, there was like three different versions of the 360.
You're right. But
there was, but they didn't change in terms of the GPU.
I know I'm going round in circles, but you mentioned that, and I just can't help but point out something like Resident Evil 4, which, you know, kind of looked like crap on PlayStation 2 compared to the GameCube version, which was way crisper, or the PC version, which was notoriously a bad port.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I kind of find myself pushing back against that argument, because I'm like, this has always been the case where you've been comparing this stuff and you've been wanting the best version of it. And yes, the Pro kind of phenomenon has exacerbated that, but the idea of this version is less good than this version, which is better than this version, and oh my God, I'm having like the fear of missing out or buyer's remorse. That, to me, that's always been integral to the console experience.
If Capcom were designing Resident Evil 4 for all those systems at once, you wouldn't have got Resident Evil 4. Like the fact that they made it for GameCube and then they made a version for PlayStation 2 and then it like it spun off and that kind of, that's a different thing to me than like than designing it, than it feels like Capcom hit their vision of that game because they had a set of specs to aim for and they were able to execute on it and then they figured out how to put it elsewhere and there were different versions and whatever else. But I think, yeah, I do think that's different to a family of consoles and then having an idea for a game and then sort of aiming to put it on various different tiers within that family of systems at the same time.
Right, okay.
I think that would be the distinction for me in that case.
I get the distinction. I don't agree with it, but we'd only go around the same arguments.
I'm a sick man, so it's fine. But yeah, we will revisit this at some point because there will be various other bits of information for the PlayStation 5 Pro. Maybe by the end of the year, I guess we'll see.
Probably.
There's more. There's Opening Night Live. There's more various press conferences and stuff to go. But for now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, and happy birthday, Scott Tilford.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you very soon.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.